So what I thought we would do is talk a little about Hilchos Pesach, as I alluded to last time, in terms of looking at the Seder. And it's not going to be just, I will mention a couple of things in the booklet, but you know, one of the, I guess my Hilchos Pesach background relates to my Rebbeim at YU, and there's like a certain, you know, Mahalach when you learn Hilchos Pesach, or when you learn even Haggadah, so like Haggadah is even used to look through the lens of Hilchos Pesach, meaning it's not necessarily these cute Divrei Torah, although there's room for that too. So what I want to do for today, even though it'll be mentioning a few pieces from Rav Soloveitchik in his Haggadah, it's really explaining the Halacha. I'm just going to close this back door. So we'll start with the mitzvah, kind of going in order, the mitzvah of Kadesh, of the Dalet Kosos. And there's really two big aspects that I want to touch upon, and then we'll maybe talk about some of the particulars. So there's a halacha in Shulchan Aruch that, at first glance, is pretty strange, that says that you're not allowed to make Kiddush at the Seder until it's for sure nighttime, until it's Laila. And at first glance, it's pretty odd. At this time of year already, especially this year, a little earlier because of the changing of the clocks, we're all making, or many of us are making, early Shabbos, right? We make early Shabbos, we daven when it's broad daylight, we come home and make Kiddush, it's still broad daylight, right? If you make the 6:10 minyan or whatever it is. So we have this notion in Halacha of making early Shabbos, early Yontif, so why would it be any different at the Seder that we have to specifically wait for it to get late? So that's the question, and there's two different opinions which have real interesting ramifications. The first one, the first answer is given by the Magen Avraham, who says that if you look in the Halacha, it tells us that the mitzvah of matzah has to be done at night, right? You have to wait till it's nighttime, and the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim has to happen at night. What's the unique thing with those two, as we talked about last week? Those are the two mitzvot min haTorah of the Seder night. And why do they have to be in at night? Because it's patterned after the Korban Pesach. We say that in the Haggadah when it talks about the timing of when you could eat it. Right? It had to be eaten at night. So the Korban Pesach had to be eaten at night, which means you'd have to wait till it's dark to eat the Korban Pesach. We don't have that anymore. But we do have matzah, we do have Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Those are the biblical mitzvah. Says the Magen Avraham, there's a famous principle that says, "Kol detikun rabbanon ke'en de'oraisa tikun," which means that whenever Chazal created a law, a rabbinic law, they patterned it after a biblical law. So the rabbinic laws, and this is where it's going to get interesting, this one could be used as a good Dvar Torah at the Seder, you'll see why in a moment. The rabbinic laws were also patterned by the same time. So Dalet Kosot, Kiddush, which is the first of the four Kosot, has to be done at night because it's like the Korban Pesach and it has to follow that time period. Now, if we go with that logic, there's two interesting ramifications. Number one, and you know, at everybody's Seder, there's either the people who are kind of pushing for the Seder to finish quicker, or there's the people who like to make sure it extends as late as possible. So this Dvar Torah could potentially be worked in either direction. According to the Magen Avraham, what would happen is, not only would the first cup have to be done balayla, but you'd actually have to finish the last cup, when? By Chatzos, because the whole thing is being based on the time period of the Korban Pesach, and we know that's why we try to finish Afikomen by Chatzos, because that was the time when the Afikomen was supposed to be finished by. So one could argue that the interesting part of this halacha is not just do you have to wait till it's dark to say Kiddush, but you also have to finish the fourth cup by the time it's Chatzos too. So again, you could use that as a way of motivating people to finish earlier, potentially. Again, this year it's going to be really hard because the clocks are changed and Chatzos is really, really late anyway, so it's not going to help so much. That's one ramification. The other ramification, which is not so likely, but it is good, interesting nonetheless, what happens if you made a mistake, right? A lot of our shuls will daven a little earlier. They'll just tell you and make sure you don't say Kiddush, you know, before it hits the time for Tseis HaKulcham and for dark. So what happens if you made a mistake and you actually made Kiddush earlier and then you realized your mistake? So what do you do to rectify it? Do you just drink another cup, or do you have to repeat the entire Kiddush? So one could argue, based on this same principle, that when you drink, when you made Kiddush, there was really nothing wrong with your Kiddush. Just the fact that Kiddush also plays the role of the four kosod, or the first one, and that has to be done later, right? So similar to something we'll talk about in a little while, haseba, reclining, if you drink certain cups without reclining, you have to drink another cup. You don't have to repeat, you know, a bracha, you don't repeat Kiddush or anything like that. It's just that you need to drink another cup. So similarly here, according to the Magen Avraham's logic, if you drank the cup, if you made Kiddush early, you wouldn't have to repeat the entire Kiddush. The Kiddush was fine, just the four cups. You must have all four of them after it's nighttime, so you would just repeat another drinking of another cup, and that would be sufficient. That's according to the Magen Avraham. But Taz, another famous commentary, has a different idea, which you know, is an important halacha. Take us back to our seminary days and days of Hilchos Shabbos. We know in Hilchos Shabbos, it's Yontif too, that there's a halacha of Kiddush b'makom suda. Right, that when you make Kiddush on Shabbos and Yontif, it has to be in the place where you're eating your suda, and that's where you're actually going to eat the suda. Right? So it's a lot of Hilchos Shabbos ramifications for Kiddushes and things like that. But the bottom line is that in this case, what's the suda on Pesach night? So we know, b'shasha yesh matzah umaru munachem lefanacha, right, that the time of fulfilling the mitzvah of the suda on Pesach is the matzah and the marah. That's the main, yeah, we'll have a nice meal too, for anyone who's hungry still by the time we get there. But the ikar suda is the matzah and the marah, and we already explained that that already has to be at night. So if you made Kiddush early, says the Taz, you would not be making Kiddush b'makom suda. Right, it would be, even though the food could be there, you're not able to eat it yet, right? It's too early to fulfill the mitzvah. So according to the Taz, if you made Kiddush, the reason the Shulchan Aruch tells us, don't make Kiddush till it's for sure nighttime, is for this specific reason, that it would not be Kiddush b'makom suda. Now, the two ramifications we said before would be the flip. Number one, this then there has only to do with the beginning time, right? It doesn't impact the end time. According to the Taz, you could stay up till 3 in the morning till you finish your fourth cup. It would have no impact. It was only the first reason that said that the boundaries go by the Zman of the Achilas Korban Pesach. Second one is, and this is again important for Shabbos, Kiddush b'makom suda is lav shmei Kiddush. It's not considered Kiddush. It's like a brachal of Atala. You got to start from scratch all over again. So in the second ramification, if you accidentally make Kiddush early, and then you waited now a few minutes till it got dark out, you'd actually have to repeat the entire Kiddush, not just drink another cup. So that's the two reasons. Nevertheless, the halacha is that you have to make sure it is for sure nighttime before you make Kiddush. That's the first idea. Second idea, which I'm going to bring to you, this is straight out of Rav Soloveitchik's Haggadah, and he poses it as a question which I don't think any of us are ever going to have to handle, I hope. But through analyzing the following question, he teaches us a lot of important halachos. And I don't want to say specifically to women, but a few that really have an impact that women have to pay special attention to. His father, Rav Soloveitchik's father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, in Europe, was posed with the following question. Unfortunately, in their town, they didn't have on Pesach enough wine, or at least in his household, I don't know if it was a city problem or his house, whatever it was, they didn't have enough wine for every member of the Seder to have four cups. So they were posed with the following question. Should the head of the household have four cups and then be motzi everybody else, kind of similar to the way we do on Kiddush on Shabbos, right? Or would it be better to use what we call Chamar Medina? So again, in Hilchos Kiddush on Shabbos, we know there's a rule of Chamar Medina, the drink of the land, that's technically something that could be used for Kiddush. You know, we typically don't rely upon that on Friday night. Shabbos morning, we tend to do it more often. What exactly is in the category of Chamar Medina? So that's a different conversation. The one agreed upon example is one that's not going to help you much on Pesach because it's beer, which is chametz. But beer is often assumed to be chamar medina. But again, other poskim talk about other things. And again, it's an interesting conversation how you determine that. So let's put that aside so we don't take that time out. Whatever the chamar medina is, maybe tea could be a possibility as an option of chamar medina. So we'll use that one for the story. So in your household, you could either have everybody have tea and have 4 cups of tea, right? Or you'd have the head of the household make kiddush on 4 cups of wine and be motzi everyone else. So which one is better? That was the question that he posed, that was real at the time. And again, even though I don't think, hopefully we won't have this challenge, his analysis is really interesting and it really does have an impact on us. And this is what he says. He says, the Gemara says, which the Rambam quotes, 2 halachos about dalakosos. The first one is, which again, we don't have this one too frequently today, if you drink the 4 cups of wine, what he called, like, in the times of the Gemara, they didn't get the wine the way we did, that it would be very strong wine, the content, and then before everybody drank it, they would dilute it with water. So what he refers to as if you would drink the yayin chai, right, the raw wine when it was like in this very undiluted, it wasn't enjoyable that way, like no one would drink it that way. But if you drink the wine in its raw state, so the Gemara says that you are yotze dalad kosot, but you're not yotze yidei chayrus. Okay, so there's some kind of chayrus aspect, some kind of, you know, freedom aspect. So that we're going to explain you're not yotze, and we'll explain why in a minute. But the dalad kosot, which we'll also have to explain what that means, he says that aspect of the mitzvah, you are yotze. Flip case, and this is why this one is important, especially at the Seder if you're back and forth and not always able to sit at the Seder the entire time. If you were shosa the 4 cups, what the Gemara calls bevas achas, in a row. 1, 2, 3, 4. You drink 4 cups in a row, not at the proper times when we say them at the Seder. So the Gemara says the opposite. You're not yotze the dalad koso, but you're yotze yedei chayrus. So the exact flip. So what is exactly, what are these terminologies of yedei chayrus and yotze yedei dalad koso? What does that mean? So what Rav Soloveitchik explains is as follows. There's 2 aspects to the mitzvah of dalad koso that we need to be aware of. There's one that we call seder devarim al hakos, that there are 4 very prescribed times at the Seder where Chazal instituted each of the 4 kosot. And to fulfill the mitzvah that we call the 4 kosot, it's not enough to just drink 4 cups, right? You have to drink them at their very specific time. So when we say shotam bavaz achas, you're not yotze, it doesn't mean literally just right now I down 4 cups. It means I drink 1, 5 minutes later I come drink another one, another few minutes I drink another one. As long as they're not at the right times that's prescribed in the Haggadah, then I'm not yotze, what the Gemara calls yedei dalakosa. There is another aspect, which is what we Gemara call the chirus aspect, which means that to drink the shasia of dalakosa at the Seder has to be done like so many other things that we know, has to be done in a chirus type of way, in a freedom type of way where we're showing our freedom. And therefore, what the point here is that to be considered drinking at the Seder, it has to have this aspect of chiras. So raw wine is not considered drinking. It's not an enjoyable act, right? And that's why when the Gemara said, if you drink the yayin chai, you're not yotze, you're yedei shtia, you're not yotze, the main aspect of the drinking. Did you have them at the 4 correct places? Yeah, you did. But you didn't really drink the wine properly. Similarly, in the other case where you drink them 4 in a row, like we explained, you had beautiful wine, it tasted beautiful, cheres was beautiful, so you did cheres yiriyote, but you did dalakoso, the seder devar malakos, having them at the 4 correct places, that you were not yotze. So that's what Rav Soloveitchik says, is what the Gemara and really the Rambam are trying to explain to us, is these 2 aspects that we have to have completed properly to fulfill the mitzvah of dalad kosot. So now he comes back to our question, which you're going to see is still not going to help us so much. What's going to be if I have the head of the household make kiddush for everybody else? So then he can help take care of everybody's mitzvah of seder devarim al hakos, right? It's a institutional part of the Seder. He can take care of that for us, the same way he can make Kiddush for us on Shabbos, the same way he can do other mitzvahs for us, right? You know, so the Seder Devarim Al HaKos, the head of the household, could be Yotze, no problem. But he can't drink for us. right? That's just not physically possible, right? So the point is, if the head of the household were to make Kiddush for us, it would be lacking in this shtia, this yedei cheres aspect, because that, you know, you can't do one for another. Each person has to do that themselves. On the other hand, what's the other option? The other option isn't much better, says Rav Salavitch. A chamar medina, even though the Ramah, Rav Moshe Isserles, paskins that b'di'eved, you could be yotze the dalakosa with chamar medina, right? Certainly not what's preferred. Ramah says technically you could be yotze. Rav Salavitch says, but it doesn't mean that you're really yotze. It just means it's better than not having anything else. He says, yeah, if you have tea at each of the four cups, you're yotze the seder devarim alakos. But the yedei cheres only comes with wine. It has to be alcoholic content, although we'll talk about that in a minute if that's totally true. It has to be wine, let's call it for the next minute or two, that you drink at the four cups. And therefore, chamar medina, you would kind of be yotze, but not fully. So what Rav Salavitch's analysis basically tells us is that in that scenario that Rav Moshe Salavitch, his father, had, neither option was really perfect. In the end, what Rav Moshe Salavitch chose to do, again, the least of good options, or the best of good options, was the first cup. He drank wine and was yotze everybody else, and then I think the last three, everybody had whatever the chamar medina was that they had. And again, they didn't have a choice, so that's what they did. So thankfully, you know, so he kind of did a little bit of both, but really, they were both had the same lack, right? They both were lacking this chayrus aspect. So bottom line for us is just a few takeaways. Number one is this part that your day, Seder Devar Malakos is really super important, and that we really need to drink the four cups at the prescribed times. So again, if for some reason, you know, again, it's not subject specifically to women, but sometimes if you're taking care of kids or whatever else is going on, right, the same thing is true for the men, that if you kind of are not at the Seder the entire time and have to step away, and then you walk back and everybody's up to the second cup and drinking, you shouldn't just pick up your cup, make a bracha, and drink. You really have to make sure that you've at least accomplished the main parts of that Seder, you know, that aspect that you need to do. What that part is, we'll talk about. But similarly, you know, if you have to accomplish something or take care of something, don't just drink the cup at some random point. They really have to be at their four places. That's the first part. The other part, which we'll just talk about briefly, and this is a big debate, this cheres aspect. So what could you drink to be yotze the mitzvah? So most poskim assume that you need to drink wine, right? And that grape juice, for example, would not be sufficient. Well, I shouldn't say most poskim. Rav Moshe Feinstein was the main posek that we, you know, that people talk about, who was specifically of that opinion. And he said that it was the alcoholic content that kind of infused the cheres into the drink. And therefore, he was very careful that you drink wine. Many, many other poskim say that grape juice is perfectly sufficient. And I think the general practice is to try to drink wine unless you can't, right? So if for some reason you don't like wine, or it doesn't agree with you, or, you know, you get headaches, you know, there's all kinds of scenarios. People don't, right? Or you fall asleep. So I think the bottom line is that many, many poskim say drinking grape juice is totally fine. I happen not to enjoy wine. And, you know, what I often do is I just take, like, a lot of grape juice, and then I fill in, like, a little bit of wine, like, on the top, just so you have a little bit of the taste of wine. And I think this way, the fever of Moshe will also be yotze, and everybody's happy, so to speak. But again, it's important that, even though the world generally is machmir to have wine, and I think that's good, nevertheless, you know, if someone really can't have wine, grape juice really will suffice. Now, the other parts which are in the booklet, so maybe I'll just grab one for a second about dalakosa, and then we'll move on. So if we look at, because this is also could get confusing. This is on, oh, right there on page one. I didn't have to go too far. So on page one, number 3 and 4 and 5, so how much do you have to drink is often what people think about, but they often confuse it with how big the cup has to be. So there's really three questions here, or three measurements. How big does the cup have to be physically? Then how much do you have to drink? And then how much time do you have to actually drink that amount? Those are really the three things to keep in mind. So the cup has to be the size of a revius, right, which is no different than any other kiddush. The only thing is, like everything with shiurim, there's a machlokas, a debate, how big a revius is. Again, and this is just how big the cup has to be, but we'll see that this is significant. So you see there, the Chazon Ish on the most machmir side, it's a little over 5 ounces. The Chafetz Chaim had about 4. Rav Moshe Feinstein says 4.42. If in a case of illness, which we'll talk about, you know, then maybe a little smaller, even a 3.3. Bottom line is that I think most of the world assumes with Rav Moshe Feinstein's numbers, right? And often what is said is that when it's a derabanan, then you can go with a little smaller shear. When it's a DRI, so you got to go with the bigger shear. So it happens to be the way this Pesach falls out this year, right? It's also Shabbos. So Kiddush on Shabbos is a deoraisa, right? Kiddush at the Seder, if it wasn't Shabbos, is only a derabanan. So any other year, or I guess at the second Seder, right, you could actually have a cup that's a little smaller, whereas Friday night you should have a cup that's a little bigger. Again, the difference in reality between a cup that's 4.42 ounces and 5.07 ounces is really negligible. And most of our standard size Kiddush cups are probably in the almost 6 ounce range. You know, again, there's all kinds of sizes, but in like a standard, not too big, not too small type of situation. So that's part A, but we'll see why this is really relevant. Part two is, so how much of the wine do you have to drink? So the halacha really is that you have to drink a rov of the revius. So in a given year, where your cup only has to be, let's say, 3.3 or 4 ounces, 4.4, whatever it is. So we're really only talking about 2 ounces, maybe 2.5 ounces. The most strict opinion of the Chazon Ish would be a little over 2.5 ounces, right? So that's to be yotzei the mitzvah. You only have to drink, let's just say, for, you know, ease sake, 2.5 ounces of the cup. That's the me'ikr hadin. L'chatchila, it's always best if you can to drink the whole cup, which is one reason why you should try not to have a very large cup, right? Because you don't want to have too much. But since there is this l'chatchila of drinking the whole cup, so it would be best to have a cup that's really right around the 5-6 ounces so that you can finish the whole cup and not have to drink so much, because then, like you said, you'll fall asleep. The other part of it is that there's also a l'chatchila that if the cup is bigger than a revius, which many of our cups will be, that you drink a rov kos. That's where people sometimes get confused. The halacha is, like the bottom line to fulfill the mitzvah, is rov revius. But oftentimes our cups are bigger than a revius, so there's a lechatchila, it's preferred to drink a rov kos. And again, the best thing, like we said, is to drink the entire cup. So again, if you're home for Pesach and you're in control of this, so good. Make sure everyone at the Seder has a cup that's not too big, not too small, and everybody can have the right amounts. Sometimes people go away for Pesach, got to be a little more careful, because sometimes hotels, they have like either these really small wine glasses that potentially could be too small, and then the other option, if you don't bring your own wine cups, is like these big water glasses that could be, I don't know, 10 ounces, and then you're in trouble. Not in trouble, but if you want to fulfill the mitzvah lechatchila, you really should aim for a cup that's right around the, let's say, 5-6 ounces.
And a revius is like the size of a shot glass.
So a revius that's a kezias. A kezias, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes when we get to matzah, that's like the volume of a shot glass. Yeah. So a revius, you know, think about, you know, just in terms of like, you know, your plastic cups are generally 7-8. Yeah, a kezias. Yeah, the standard shot glass is 1 point. Yeah, standard shot glass is 1.1 ounces. Yeah, yeah. No, I would say think of it more like in terms of like your standard, like, you know, like a Kiddush cup or like if you have plastic cups, you know, that are usually 7 ounces. I mean, yeah, yeah. But again, this is something that's worth, you know, and again, I'm not suggesting, even though it's preferred that everyone drink the whole cup, that everyone do that. Again, depends. Some people can take it, some people can't, some people, you know, shouldn't, whatever the scenario is. But all of the reasons point to not have too big of a cup, and you certainly don't want a cup that's too small where you're not actually yotzei the mitzvah. So this is a worthy thing to make sure that everyone's cups are somewhere in a good range.
Yeah. I really
have one. Yeah. Okay. The last part to this, as I mentioned, is how long do you have to drink it? So this is really complicated in terms of where this all comes from. The same thing I'm going to tell you now applies to all of the mitzvos that we have to eat, right? Whether it's matzah or maror. Lichat chila, preferably, one should try to drink, again, not the whole cup, but the row of revia, so it's not so hard, within one or two sips, okay? Then after you finish your 2.5 ounces, you could take your time, because that's all like lechatchila at that point anyway. So that would be the best way to do it. Then there's this idea that the poskim talk about, that somewhere between 2 and 4 minutes would still fit into the realm of lechatchila. After 4 minutes, up to 9 minutes would still be okay. After 9 minutes, you're totally not yotze, you got to start again. Now again, to drink 2.5 ounces in less than 9 minutes, hopefully is not such a hard undertaking. If it is a hard undertaking, you probably should be drinking something different, right? Like if you can't drink that much wine, then you should probably be drinking, grape juice or something like that. But that's the typical time frame that the post can talk about. But again, it's important to remember we're not, right? And don't let anyone convince you otherwise. Like, if everyone drinks their Ruh Vervias in 1 to 2 gulps, that's great. Like, you don't have to, sit there and, down the whole cup and make yourself crazy. I don't think there's any such lechatchila, to do that. You can take your time, a minute or two afterwards, and that's fine. Okay, so that is Kiddush. The only thing I'll mention without really touching, going too far, which is on the page 2 at the very end of the Kaddish section. So, right, we know this year with the second Seder on Motzei Shabbos, so we bring in the famous concept of what we call Yak Nahaz, which is like the Rosh Tevot for Yayin Kiddush Ner Havdalah Zman, which is what tells you how to know the proper order for Kiddush. Now, we know the proper order because we just look in the Haggadah and we just follow along, right? But when you have Havdalah that has to get put in, so it's always good to remember that first Yayin, like Borei Pri HaGafen, then it's Kiddush, then and it goes through what's that? Yeah, Ma'avil Mikrosh goes Nun for Ner, Hey for Havdalah, Zman for Shechianu, which goes all the way at the end. Anyway, you'll follow the Haggadah, but I just mentioned that one since it's applicable specifically this year. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about matzah. So, before we talk about some of the nitty-gritty part, Rav Soloveitchik in his Haggadah has a very interesting conversation, which I don't know if anyone read, but I actually put this one, I put out in my, I changed my parsha thought this week, the next couple of weeks, to thoughts from the Haggadah, so I mentioned that there. And that, as we all know, that our custom, and most people's custom, some Sephardim maybe not, as we'll see, but most Jewish homes on Pesach night have 3 matzos, right? Why do we have 3 matzos? So our kids often come home with cute Devarei Torah, different reasons. I don't know, Kohen Levi Yisrael, I don't know what the other ones are that they come up with. Typically, the understanding on a halachic nature is as follows. We know that the special part of matzah on the Seder night is that it has to be lechem ani, a poor man's bread. There's lots of discussion of that at the Seder, right? That has a lot of halachic ramifications, how you make matzah. That's why at Yachatz we break the matzah in the beginning of the Seder. We want to have the Seder over a broken matzah. And then we know that we have a halacha that we have every Shabbos Yantav of lechem mishnah, right? That you have to have 2 complete whole loaves to say hamotziyu, right? And therefore, that's why at the Seder we have 3 halachically. We have to have 2 for lechem mishnah, and this 3rd one that we have to break, because it's a mitzvah at the Seder to have lechem ani. And if we were to only have 2, we wouldn't have 2 complete loaves. And that's why halachically we have 3. Interestingly, the Rambam, in his halachos, mentions that at his Seder he only had 2. Right? He took 2 matzos. Why? He would take 1 matzah, Ayachat break it, biyotze lachem ani, and he would make hamotzi with those two pieces together along with the other whole matzah. And he explained that the reason is that on Pesach, the halacha of lechem oni overrides the normal Shabbos and Yontif requirement of lechem mishnah, right? So therefore, he says it's just not necessary to have lechem mishnah at the Seder. Interesting, we happen not to follow it, but what's even more interesting is, Rav Soloveitchik says, wait a second, if that's true, that the Rambam held that the lechem oni overrides the lechem mishnah, so what did he need two matzos for? Just take one matzah, break it in half. Right? What was the whole point of having the other matzah? I don't understand, says Rav Soloveitchik. So Soloveitchik says that we need to understand this a little bit better. And he basically says, and this is again has nothing to do with Pesach, he says in the Gemara in Brachos, that talks about the laws of Brachos, the Gemara poses the following question where there's a debate. What do you do during the week? You have a large piece of bread that's already been cut from some loaf, and you have a small, tiny challah roll. So which one is it preferable? You're going to eat bread. Which one should you make the hamotzi over? The one that's bigger or the one that's whole? And the Gemara there actually has a debate. One opinion says that you should go by whichever one you want. The other one says you should go by the whole because whole is always better. But Rav Soloveitchik points out that in the Gemara, everyone in the Gemara would agree that if they were equal size, you would go by the full one, what the shlemus, you would go by a full, complete roll. So what Rav Soloveitchik says is that the requirement to make hamotzi on a shalim, on a loaf that's full, is a halacha that applies all year. Anytime you're going to have bread, it is preferable, again, we'll talk about that, the aspects of that in 2 minutes also, because that can come up realistically. You go to a restaurant or even in your house. But Rav Soloveitchik said the requirement to have a shalim applies every day of the year. And therefore, what the Rambam was getting at was as follows, that the reason you have two matzos is because the lechem ani can override the lechem mishnah to have two complete loaves like we do. But it can't override the everyday mitzvah of shleimus. That applies every day of the year. Lechem ani is a yantif law, so it overrides a different yantif law called lechem mishnah. But it can't override the daily requirement to make a bracha over, over the shalim. And that's why the Rambam said you have two. One for the shalim, because you have to have that every day, and one for the lechem ani that you'll break and have the lechem ani over. Now again, end of the story is, so as Ashkenazim, and again, even some Sfaradim, I'm not positive, I think many Sfaradim don't go by this particular Rambam, but I'm not positive about that. But the bottom line is, at the end of the day, we assume you accomplish both, right? You have the lechem mishnah, and you have the lechem ani, and you don't have to have one override the other. Right, so we have two complete loaves. We have one loaf, one additional one that we can break. Best proof to all of this in a halachic nature, if you have any of the Haggadahs that often give you like little halachic, guidelines of what to do. So when you get to motzi matzah, pay attention, and you'll see what it says is that when we take the matzah after we wash, the head of the household or whoever has three matzos in front of them hold all three matzos for hamotzi, and then it says to drop or carefully place down the bottom matzah and only hold the top one and the middle broken one for alachilas matzah. And it's for this reason. You don't need the lechem mishnah anymore. Lechem mishnah is for the hamotzi. When you get to the mitzvah of matzah, so that part is gone already. You don't need that anymore. And again, that's what the halacha says. Again, I don't know, that's a huge deal if you ended up holding all of them for both brachos, but the best possible way to do that would be, in fact, to hold all three, say hamotzi, put the bottom one down for alachilos matzah. So the only thing, just as an aside point to this, so it isn't something to really keep in mind, but the way I always understood this halacha is it's not something you need to make yourself crazy about or go out of your way for. So what that means is if you go to a restaurant and they serve you bread that's already sliced, like you don't have to go ask them for a a whole loaf. Right? It's really more in situations where you have the opportunity where it's whole, so then you shouldn't specifically make a bracha on it when it's broken. So, for example, if you were going to serve at your house, or again, it could happen in a restaurant, either way, a whole loaf of some sorts, it really would be best to make the bracha while it's whole. So the best example I could think of would be, I can't go to bagels here, but whatever other good sandwich you'll have in your house. Let's say you're having sandwiches at home, right? And it's coming from a whole loaf, if that's the case, otherwise this isn't relevant. So I'll use my bagel idea. So
what about a baguette?
Same idea. So I think it would be best for everybody or whoever's eating at the meal to make hamotzi over the baguette or the bagel, whatever, while it's whole. Make hamotzi, and then take 5 minutes and cut it up and make your sandwich, as opposed to cutting it up and make the sandwich first. Now again, depending on the scenario, you may not have to make yourself so crazy about that if you're making, you know, 50 sandwiches and you're going someplace or something. I think there's like a certain limit to how crazy one has to be about this, but I think in easier situations, the chatchila, best way to do it would be to make the bracha over while it is whole. Okay. Let's stick with some of the details now with matzah. So, again, matzah is like one of those things, either you love it or you hate it, and therefore you can either eat a lot of it or you can barely eat any of it. That's at least been my experiences. So if you look on page 4, so we already mentioned last week, just to go back 1 second, there are 3 times at the Seder where we eat matzah, motzi matzah, korech, and afikomen. We talked quickly last week that there's a debate which is the biblical fulfillment, right? And it's a debate amongst Rishonim, either motzi matzah or afikomen. Everyone agrees korech is a mitzvah derabbanon. Now, how much matzah do you have to eat? So now we're going to go back to your shot glass, right? So the halacha is that you have to have a kazayas, okay? And for other reasons, which we'll leave aside for now, it could be that we are even sometimes makbid to have 2 kazayasim. The bottom line, to keep it simple, is that assuming we all have like the round, you know, handmade matzah, some people have machine-made, but we'll leave that in the topic of shmur matzah for another time. But you can have shmur matzah that's in a box that's square too. But assuming you're having the round handmade matzahs, so most posts can assume that for motzi matzah and afikomen, you should have a half a matzah. Whereas for korech, which is derabanan, you can actually have a half of that, which is more like a quarter. So korech is really not too hard. Again, half a matzah for some people is terrible, and for some people it's easy. But the bottom line is that would be the amount of matzah to be yotze at each of these 3 places. Same thing as before in terms of the time period, except here you're not drinking it, so there's no first level of drinking it in 2 sips. It's really the lechatchila is to drink that amount in, let's say, 2 minutes, 2 to 4 minutes, up to 9 minutes. After 9 minutes, you're not yotze. So, you know, my general advice would be to aim for the 2 to 4 minutes, and then lefi everybody, you've done everything properly, and you can be good. You know, if you learn through the Shulchan Aruch and Mishnah Berurah, there are some other details that are brought about, which are, again, on the lechatchila level. I'll just mention one, because everybody's household has someone who tries to do this, even though I've tried, it's not really so easy to accomplish, right? There's actually a source that says that one should finish the entire kazayas at once. So how on earth do you possibly do that? So the answer is, basically you would sit there and chew the matzah, and then keep it in your mouth, and keep chewing more, till finally you've got the whole thing in your mouth, if that's physically possible, and then swallow it. So there is such a notion that's put out there. Again, I've never observed anyone be able to do it that perfectly, but if you do find someone trying to do that, don't think he's crazy or she's crazy. There actually is a source for trying to do that. Again, it's totally a lechatchila of lechatchilas. Again, if everybody in your house at the Seder would eat their piece of matzah within 2 to 4 minutes, would be good. And then one other point, which I just want to go back, which I guess is obvious from what I've said, both that would apply to the dal kosos and to the matzah we just mentioned. Unfortunately, people don't understand or realize these laws at all. And, you know, someone might, for dal kosos, just take the cup and take a little sip. Or here, they may take matzah and take a little bite, you know, of a little piece. And unfortunately, you're really not yotzei the mitzvah if you don't have the proper shear. that's not just a Pesach halacha, right? That's a halacha, right? Unfortunately, there's many people who at the Shabbos table, let's say there's a different halacha, but it's just as important, right? They may have Shabbos, they'll take a bite of challah, not take anything else, right? So you're not really yotzei your mitzvah of suda on Shabbos that way, and probably worse than that is then you probably would bench, and you're not chayev to bench if you don't have enough bread, and now you've made four brachos levatala, like that's not really so good. So the point is that the shiur, to be able to fulfill the mitzvah, right, Chazal gave us the ways of how to do it. But in fact, these are not all from Chazal, right? There are such a shiur. The original shiurim are from the Torah, right? We know that the idea of chametz, of eating a kazayas of chametz, comes from the Torah. That's a biblical law, right? So they're not all rabbinically. But many of these other things we're talking about today are parts that Chazal gave us to tell us how to fulfill the mitzvah properly. So it's just important to keep that in mind.
Is there anything
left
with regards to eating the
matzah
in that 2 to 4 minutes without speaking?
Yes, that's a good point too. Yeah. So you really should not talk at all till you've finished your, right? So again, bigger topic of what's called as a hefsek or hesek hadast when you interrupt. So for example, the worst hefsek someone could make is actually you made the bracha on hamotzi and then you started to talk before you even ate a piece of the food, right? Then, assuming that what you talked about had nothing to do with what you're doing, right? Like you just started talking about, I don't know, the baseball game, then you'd actually not be yotze, you'd have to make a new bracha, right? Whereas the Gemara gives an example, which is real. Again, you should try not to do this, but if you make hamotzi and you realize you don't have the salt and you ask someone to say, go get the salt, then actually you wouldn't have to make a new bracha because it has to do with what you're doing. But keeping things simple, yeah, if you're talking about the sad American politics, you know, then that would be a hefsek, and you'd have to make a new bracha. And or in your case, you know, you wouldn't be yotze; you'd have to eat a full kazai. So you really should not talk. That's more of a lechatz chilek. I don't think you're not yotze, but if you're in the middle of eating your kazayas, and then you talked, I think I would say you're not yotzei the mitzvah, but it's certainly you shouldn't do that. In fact, many poskim talk about that, and this is a little more challenging, that really you shouldn't talk from the time you make hamotzi till after you're done with korech, because the hamotzi is going on the matzah of korech too. So that's going to take some time if you have a bunch of people at your seder, right? Because you have to have motzi matzah, you got your 2 to 4 up to 9 minutes for that. And then you're going to have maror, you got your 2 to 4 up to 9 minutes for that. And then you have korech, right? So really, one should not talk. Again, you're allowed to say past the maror. You're allowed, those kind of things are not an issue. But about other things, really, one shouldn't be talking in that time period. And the only way I've seen that successful at the Seder is where you kind of get everyone into this notion and explain that ahead of time so that everyone can be mindful of it, because otherwise people just accidentally are going to talk and they're not going to know why you're not talking. Right? They're just not going to understand. Okay. So that is matzah. Let's mention two things about karpas, which are mentioned there in the booklet. The first one is, and they really, the 2 points go together. So we know that you make a bracha of avorei pri adama on the karpas, and you're supposed to have in mind the maror, even though you're not eating the maror for another hour or two. For whatever reason, it's a very interesting conversation. We don't make avorei pri adama on the maror. The most often assumed answer, but it's not the only one, and maybe not even the one that everyone follows, is you already made hamotzi, so you don't need to make a bracha on the maror anymore. The problem with that is that if you learn Hilchos Brachos, you'll see that if you have hamotzi, and then you have some kind of fruit or vegetable that's not really like a, you know, machmas hasuda, whatever that means, that it's like a real food. So like if you have like a cantaloupe or something like that at the beginning of the suda, according to many poskim, not everybody, but many poskim, you'd actually have to make a separate bracha, even though you just made hamotzi 5 minutes ago or 2 minutes ago. So again, I'm not going to deal with that now. But the bottom line is, it's not just so simple to say, well, I made a motzi, so I don't have to make a bracha on the mar. Not so simple. So the halacha is that the Shulchan Aruch and Mishnah Berurah points out, you should, when you make borei pei adama on the karpas, have in mind the marer, and so you'll be yotzei, according to all opinions, you'll get the adama taken care of when you make the bracha on the karpas. No different than, you know, if you're sitting down to have a meal, you make, a shahakol on a piece of chicken. When you take your glass of, you know, water or, you know, whatever you're drinking that's a shahakol, you don't make another bracha, right? One covers the other one, right? In fact, you're not allowed to make another bracha, right? There, when you're having them, the only difference is here it's like an hour apart or more, right? Because you're having the karpas now and who knows when you're going to get tomorrow. Bottom line is that's what you're supposed to do. Second part to that, though, that not everybody knows, and I imagine for those people who have parsley for karpas, this is not such a challenge. But for many people who have potatoes for karpas, this might be, especially on a year like this when everyone's going to be starving because it's late and there's not much food to eat Erev Yontif and so on, right? You're supposed to dafka eat less than a kazayas of karpas, which is so not what we normally would say. We normally say when you have to do something, you've got to eat a kazayas. Here, for the exact reason we just talked about, because what's going to happen, if you have a kazayas of, let's say, a potato, you can't say, now I'm going to wait 2 hours to take care of the bracha achrona, right? So if you eat a kazayas of karpas, then you would immediately be obligated to make a borei nefashos on the potato, and then you've lost your opportunity for that bracha to count for mara. So the reason why we say only have a small amount is because we don't want to obligate ourselves in a bracha achrona, because we want that borei pri adama to last all the way to maror. So therefore, again, however you'll measure a kazayas of a potato, you know, you should just make sure that people have less in the kazayas, and I think this is a challenge. Yeah, a lot of people like them. And I don't think that, the truth is, who likes really these boiled potatoes? None of us like them. We're just, everyone's starving at that point in the day, right? So it's just something to keep in mind. Okay, I'm just going to mention two other things, maybe three other things, and then we'll give it a close. So let's talk about mara real quick. There's really two or three pieces to mara that I was always trained in that I just want to mention, and a lot of this is mentioned in the booklet. So, what do you use to fulfill the mitzvah? What do you eat for a mara? Right? So, the Mishnah in Pesachim on Daf Lamed Tes actually lists 5 different items that one could use. They go in the order, and the first one that not everyone always realizes is chazeres, which is lettuce, what we refer to typically as romaine lettuce. Only the second one, called tamcha, is what we call chrein or horseradish. And then there's another, the fourth on the list, ulshin, refers to endive leaves. And there's actually 2 others, which I don't know if we know what those things are anymore today. But the bottom line is, number one, for some reason, some people are brought up thinking that if you don't have like this white horseradish that like makes your face, you know, blow up, that you're not yotzei the mitzvah. So a couple of points on that. Number one, it's not true, right? The first thing in the Mishnah is romaine lettuce, right? I assume the reason why the custom for so many generations was having the real horseradish was for one of 2 reasons. Either A, perhaps where we Jews lived at certain times, maybe they didn't have access to romaine lettuce, or B, whole separate topic applicable all year, romaine lettuce is not so simple, and today, thank God, we have an easier way of dealing with it, to, you know, be free of checks for bugs and things of that nature. So you don't want to try to fulfill a mitzvah derabanan of maror and eat bugs, which is a iser d'oraisa, right? So it could be that there were times when they couldn't get it in a way that would really be clean or cleanable. I don't know. So that's why in many of our households, like, there's this unbreakable rule that you have to have the white horseradish. But point one is, for those of you who don't have that custom or don't want to have that custom, there's absolutely nothing wrong with having the romaine lettuce. And in fact, it does sound like it's preferred in the sense that it was the first thing listed in the Mishnah. The second point, which I always heard, you know, from Rav Herschel Schechter, he always pointed out, that if you want to have horseradish, that's fine. There's obviously many people have it. It's on the list. You're Yotze, and many people have such a custom. But he always pointed out that that maror is supposed to be bitter, not sharp. And therefore he said that you have to, not just it's advised, you have to have the white horseradish ground up. If you were to take this horseradish in a huge chunk and just take a bite out of it, right, and blow up your face, right, that's not, he actually said, you're not yotze the mitzvah of maror. So again, I don't know how ground up it has to be, but the point is it shouldn't be, you know, huge, huge chunks. It should be cut up or ground up for those who have the white horseradish. And the other problem with white horseradish, that at least in my mind, is how many people have white horseradish and have a full kazayas of it, right? Again, some people just think, and this is where like real education of halacha is required, that, well, everyone's grandmother and great-grandmother and grandfather had this white horseradish, so now I have it, and that's great and beautiful, but then they take one bite and they put it down, and they're not yotzei the mitzvah because they didn't have a kazayas, right? A lot better would be to have romaine lettuce. That's a lot easier to take. And if you really want to fulfill the custom your family had for having this white horseradish for generations, so have a little piece of that, right? You can. Someone says that you can't mix them, right? But the point is you have to have a kazayas to fulfill the mitzvah like any other mitzvah. So here is where your shot glass would come into play. So who on earth would want to have a shot glass worth of that white horseradish? I personally don't know, but that's just my practice. I probably don't even have any of it at the Seder. I just have the romaine lettuce. But again, for those people who want to have it, great, but you have to have enough. When it comes to romaine lettuce, so the way that the current poskim talk about it is roughly, if you want to measure for yourself, roughly the area of like an 8x10 piece of paper. Now, point being, if you were to crumple it up, right? Again, kazayas is a volume measure, so if you were to crumple it up, you know, and stuff it in all the way into a shot glass, which is about 1.1 ounces, that would be roughly the equivalent. Same idea if you have, you know, endive leaves, you just have a bunch that would add up to that roughly 8x10 area. Yeah. You totally could. Then now you have to be a math expert and figure out how to figure out, well, I could have half a sheet of 8x10 of romaine lettuce and then a half a shot glass, because right, you're measuring two different ways, right? Because, you know, with the shot glass, you're really using volume to measure, but you're not going to take your romaine lettuce and scrunch it up into a shot glass. Just practically, you're probably not going to want to eat it at that point. So that's why we use, and it's just easier to use a regular piece of paper standard. In fact, a lot of the Judaica stores often sell like nice colored, you know, sheets that are laminated that show you, you know, from matzah how much to have from maror. So those are nice. Again, same idea, how long you have, 2 to 4 minutes. Up to 9 minutes. Again, after 9 minutes, you're not yotzei. And two last thoughts. The halacha of Sipri Yetzias Mitzrayim and fulfilling it. So there's a lot of details to that. Hopefully, in the next few weeks, we'll talk a little bit more about that. But the idea being that the Mishnah Berurah points out that everyone has to know that the ikker of Magid, which is when we fulfill Sipri Yetzias Mitzrayim, is the very end part where it talks about Rabban Gamliel, Haya Omer, right, Kolshel, whoever doesn't talk about Matzah, Maror, and Pesach, and discuss the Psukim. And the reasons is Lo Yatzah Yedei Chovaso. So that part of the Haggadah is really like what I would call like the main event. And therefore, everybody, whether you're able to sit at the Seder the entire time or not, should make sure to say those paragraphs. Again, it's not very long, but that's the one which really talks about the Korban Pesach and the Psukim from the Korban Pesach, the Matzah. You pick up the Matzah and the Psukim of the Matzah, Maror and the Psukim of the Matzah. And then there's, you know, two paragraphs of Halal, which we'll talk about next week, hopefully. And then the Bracha of the second cup. So it's just important that you are there to fulfill that. And the last halacha, just in case I forget it, which Salvechik talks about in the beginning of this Haggadah, so we didn't really talk that much about yet, but there's this mitzvah of Haseba, right? So this kind of ties in a bunch of the things we talked about, that when you drink the four cups, and when you eat your matzah, right? You're supposed to do those things beheseba. And Rav Soloveitchik points out that the world often has the wrong definition of what haseba means. And oftentimes people think haseba means to lean, but it really doesn't mean to lean. It means to recline. What's the difference? He says that leaning is if you were just to go like this, right? That is not what the Gemara had in mind of what Cheirus was. Cheirus was to actually recline. So he says, Haseba is to recline on something. So when you lean to the left, or we use those words to be Yotze Haseba, you actually have to be leaning on something, not just leaning over to your left into midair. Now, again, you could lean on a chair, you could lean on your neighbor sitting next to you, you could lean on whatever you can find, the table perhaps, unless that's not good manners. But the point is that Rav Soloveitchik was always very big to talk about this, that haseba, which is so important, and again, we didn't touch upon that, but if you, for certain cups of talakosot, if you didn't recline, you'd have to drink again. For matzah, for sure, if you didn't recline, you'd have to eat the matzah again, right? So to fulfill it properly, one should recline and lean on something, whether, like we said, a chair, a person, or some other object. But even like the pillow, right? So the pillow, it still has to be on something, right? So if you have a chair that has armrests, so perfect, that's your thing right there. But, you know, most people don't have that for every individual around the table. What some people do, I don't know, you know, what some people do is they actually take their chair and they go like this and then they put the pillow, so it's not so the most comfortable for the whole, but you could just move it around just for those mitzvahs, like turn the chair to the side, lean on the back of the chair, you know, for those few times when you have to recline. Okay, excellent.